and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. As you know, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor to tech-enabled services companies. With me today, I'm pleased to have my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Welcome, gentlemen.
And welcome to you, Mike. I know you're in we like to give a good weather report here, but you are in the warm, sunny weather of the Southwest, as Ryan and I are raking leaves up here in the Great White North. So there you go. Ryan, what's going on? What are we chatting about?
Well, it's that time of year in which deals start to get near closing time. And what we want to do in this podcast, or one of the things that is important to us, is that we reduce the amount of surprises that may come in through the M&A process. And sometimes those surprises come in through throughout the deal making. But we want to at least educate and prepare for what's going to come in a purchase agreement. And a few of those things are really related to indemnification issues that you're going to run into. And today we want to tackle something really specific but very important called caps and baskets. And again, this is something that's going to be essentially in a purchase agreement. So you're going to be after an LOI, you're going to be into the legal back and forth, but something's going to pop up called cap and baskets. So, Mike, get us going. You know, what is it? Just a pure definition of a cap and basket, and why does that matter in defining indemnification and the importance of indemnification provisions within some of these legal contracts? Keep in mind, we are not lawyers here at Revenue Rocket, but we're dealing with these kind of contracts every day.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So, you know, this is something typically your lawyer will advise you on. Typically when we're involved in a transaction, we focus on predominantly the business terms associated with the deal, and then the lawyers kind of work on the legal terms. There's benefits and advantages to that, and part of that is that we're not licensed to practice law, and they are. So they will work together with other party's lawyer to come up with reasonable cap and basket provisions for the agreement. But essentially, as a definition, a cap is the cap of the liability that a seller would have pursuant to the purchase agreement, and would consist of anything that would be considered their responsibility or associated with a breach. Caps can be as high as the amount of consideration paid in a transaction, typically is where it is. Some lawyers will ask for unlimited liability, or be silent on this topic, and then it gets introduced by seller's counsel. And then oftentimes that comes down through a negotiation between the lawyers to something that's more palatable to both sides. It's not atypical for it to be somewhere under $1 million. We've seen them as low as $100,000 or $50,000, but certainly depending on the size of the transaction will drive the size of the liability cap. A basket is the amount of things that would be considered the seller's responsibility pursuant to their indemnification. Those things have to rise to a certain level for them to bring a claim. And typically those are, in the tens of thousands. So, 10 to 50,000 is not atypical, for a basket. And a basket meaning there might be multiple things that make up, what would be considered, something that the seller would be responsible for or would indemnify the buyer for. You don't want to open a claim or an indemnification claim for every little thing. You want to be able to say, hey, it's got to rise to a certain level. And the predominant reason for that is because it's likely that legal counsel will be involved in both sides if there is an indemnification claim. And the size of the breach has to be large enough to warrant them getting involved on both sides. Now, I would tell you, typically, if something is found or there's an issue, It is resolved before there's an indemnification claim made by the buyer against the seller. Typically, they'll bring it up to the seller's attention. They'll say, hey, we saw this. It wasn't quite right. We need to figure it out. And then you simply negotiate some sort of reasonable remuneration or settlement with the buyer to resolve that problem. So hopefully that gives us a good background on what's a cap and what's a basket.
Yeah, if I was to summarize that, right, is that a cap is going to be the most a firm may have to pay if there's some kind of breach within a or some kind of liability associated with a breach of the reps and warrants policy. Is that correct? Or is reps and warrants a totally separate deal?
Well, representations and warranties are certain statements that are made. And yes, in short, that's things that you would attest to in the sale, such as that, no clients have given you notice that they're going to terminate, for example, or that, your financials are compliant with standard accounting practices or things like that. And oftentimes there's either a holdback of money, which we've talked about before, that gets paid out if there is no breaches of reps and warrants later, or a reps and warrants policy that would pay out should there be said breach of those reps and warranties. But indemnification is a little bit different because indemnification does indemnify the buyer against anything that may be outside of, obviously includes things associated with reps, but it may include things that are outside of the reps and warrants policy that could not be foreseen. For example, there may be some pending litigation that nobody knew about, or there could be something that you certainly represented as true, but impacted the business when you owned it. And if you're a seller, and in those cases, those would rise to probably require an indemnification claim, and then the caps and baskets would be applicable.
Okay, so I understand this correctly here. You've kind of got two things that are aligned in what they're trying to do, which is protect the buyer from some unforeseen change in the business that a seller may not know about. One's reps and warrants, and it's often for a company to have a holdback or an escrow to fund that coming out of the purchase price. The other section of this is the cap and basket, which is more focused on that indemnification portion of the business. The cap being the most a company would pay, and the basket being the threshold in which a transaction has a kind of a meaningfulness to it to engage in discussions like this.
Yeah, a good example, I just brought up was one that, if let's say you had a lawsuit that arised after the transaction, and sometimes that happens, right? Someone sees, maybe they have a pending grievance with the business and they see now that, well-capitalized, partner or another business acquired your business, and then they bring that lawsuit forward, for example. That could be an example. You didn't know about it as a seller. Buyer didn't know about it. You attested to the fact in your reps and warrants that there was no litigation or pending litigation. But yet, you're still ultimately responsible for what happens during when you own the business. And, you're indemnifying the buyer from those responsibilities. Even though that lawsuit may be filed against the buyer now, because let's say, you did a transaction where they own the business, it's hard to say what a pending, litigant would do, but, they could in fact sue the new buyer, and you're indemnifying them from some of that responsibility associated with when you own the business. Usually there's language to that effect, but it doesn't mean that someone wouldn't potentially sue them for a breach that occurred under your watch. And ultimately you're saying I'm responsible for that and I'll manage that to that level.
Okay, that makes sense. So if we look at specifically at the cap and the basket, if you take the lens of a seller, and what advice do you give in the negotiation for, let's say, the cap for a seller? What do they want to look for?
Well, obviously, you want to have as low a cap as you can negotiate and as reasonable. And I think in many ways, you know, this is where your lawyer can do what they do. They can do that lawyer stuff. There's oftentimes deal terms that are traded on the legal side in the negotiation. This certainly is one that almost always is, and it is negotiated. And it's one that you shouldn't get as a seller too emotional about, because very seldom do they end up where they start. There's always some sort of middle ground or some sort of reasonable accommodation that is made. In my experience, very seldom do deals get hung up on cap and basket negotiations. They happen in every deal. And as a seller, you want that number to be as low as possible on the cap. On the basket, you want it to be as high as possible. And the reason for that is you want them to have to assemble a meaningful enough amount of what they would perceive as indemnification violations to warrant bringing that claim. And the main reason for that is you're trying to protect your exposure to legal fees. You don't want to, if there's, let's say, something that amounts to $3,000 or $5,000 that was brought from, let's say, a former employee or something like that, you should just work that out with them and cover it. If it's essentially on your watch when you own the business, it's your responsibility. That's the way you should think about it. You shouldn't say, I've thrust all of the responsibility upon the new buyer, regardless of when this happens. You should be reasonable about it. But something like that claim from a former employee, let's say it was unpaid commissions or something they believe they're owed, is not something that generally would arise to a basket limit, and as a result, not warrant involving lawyers and making an indemnification claim. It would just be something that you should handle with that buyer separately.
Hey, Mike, you know, on that point, it seems like, you know, being sort of both diligent as well as comprehensive in terms of, you know, the representations by a seller is really important, right? I mean, it's like, you know, this is what you're standing by.
Yeah, you have to make sure that they're 100% accurate. There shouldn't be any gray area in the statements that you're making in your representations or warrants as a seller. That's the best way to avoid getting into, you know, an issue. Now, it doesn't mean that you'll totally avoid indemnification claims or indemnification issues, because some of the things I pointed out could be not foreseen. You may not know about them. Like you might not know that some former employee, you may have dealt with it, you thought perfectly appropriately, and they never brought up an issue. And they decide that, you know, a year later, it's chapped them that they thought that they should have been paid more for whatever reason. And they bring forth a claim to the buyer. That's, you know, that's an example of something where even if your reps and warrants are perfectly clean and you've attested to everything in the clear, and, you know, you could have not foreseen that that person would have done that, but yet the buyer shouldn't be responsible for that either, right? It happened when you ran or owned the business, and it should be your responsibility. And sometimes those little things, you know, crawl out of the cracks when people that are, you know, watching a company or may have worked at a company see that it's been sold. Sometimes they believe they have a grievance that, you know, maybe you as the buyer wouldn't have resolved positively to their, you know, whatever that claim might be, or they feel that your pockets weren't deep enough or whatever. And then when they see it sold, they bring forth these claims. And again, you couldn't have foreseen that. You may not have known that, but it's certainly something that, you know, a buyer will always look to be indemnified, have you indemnify them for.
Mike, in the process of drafting the agreements and getting through them, when do you start bringing this conversation up?
You know, there's a couple times that it can be brought up, sometimes in a detailed LOI. You'll have a situation where, you know, someone will bring it up or make a reference to it in the LOI. They might say, you know, the parties agreed to negotiate in good faith around a reasonable cap and basket of liabilities for the buyer. I would say that most of the time, LOIs are silent on this topic, however. And both reps and warrants negotiations and cap and basket negotiations typically happen in the definitive agreement. So they'll be in the legally binding agreement. And the reason why they're not necessarily brought up in the letter of intent is because that document, other than lockout provision, as we've talked about many times, and the confidentiality agreement, is not legally binding. And so you'll want to, you know, focus your energies in that negotiation around the legally binding agreement. Usually cap and basket negotiations happen very close to the end of the negotiation, as do many of the fundamental reps and warrants and related reps and warrants. There's all kinds of classifications for reps and warrants, and I suspect we'll be doing a podcast on that topic in its own right in the future. But at the end of the day, you know, it typically will happen in earnest and be documented legally pretty late in the process and before the definitive agreements are done.
And then, are there any timing or clauses for the length of an indemnification clause and these cap and baskets? Is this something that you look, is there a look back period which it might be applicable for, or a go forward period?
The short answer is it depends. Depends on how they're written and how they're negotiated. But there are, it's very unlikely that you'll give some sort of unlimited blanket liability provision protection for a buyer as it relates to time or amount. I mean, those two things are the main elements that are negotiated in that. And certainly you should expect to be having your lawyer advise you on them.
And then in terms of in deals, if we think about points in which there's a lot of back and forth, oftentimes we see that in employment agreements. We see it a lot with working capital. We see a bit with just even deal structure when it comes to perhaps a hold back for reps and warrants. And how much how much ground or fighting happens with this cap and basket amount?
You know, I would say that because lawyers are well versed in negotiating caps and baskets in every single transaction, M&A transaction, regardless of industry, will involve caps and baskets. I would say that it's not, there's quite a bit of back and forth, but it's usually not contentious. I would say, you know, it'll seem contentious and like a big deal because oftentimes it's introduced late in the process. But when push comes to shove, it's not a very contentious negotiation usually. I think on the whole, though, what's important to note and why you need a competent M&A advisor is I often say there's like 150 things to negotiate in a purchase agreement. This is one of those things. And having an advisor who's well-versed in your industry and has negotiated lots of these deals, they'll know when they should advise you to give or take on a particular deal point in the context of the broader agreement. And I think that's an important point. Sometimes people fall on the sword on things that just are very low likelihood to ever occur. This kind of is one of those things that you don't need to, you know, have a pound of flesh on the table over. Because typically indemnification challenges to purchase agreements post-close don't happen very often. I would say the same thing for reps and warrants violations. If they're built properly and negotiated in earnest, it's very low likelihood that there's ever going to be an issue. And so, again, on the sort of, you know, important scale, based on where you should give and where you should take, having a non-emotional third party who's negotiated lots of these as your advisor, certainly is well worth the investment.
That's a really important point, Mike, that, you know, when we've seen this become an issue, it's almost like, you know, the lawyers are trying to win something without really, you know, maybe explaining what it means to their respective business parties. And, you know, the if you think about that old risk matrix of severity versus likelihood, well, on the severity side, you know, somebody saying, well, geez, they could get after me for this amount, right? But the likelihood of that is like next to nothing. So on the risk matrix, it's relatively low risk, right? And the other thing is a, you know, in order to, you know, put a claim forward in any of these areas, there's got to be a sort of a burden of proof related to harm, to the entity, right? And so it's not as though a buyer can just say, well, hey, you know, I think you did this and this is how much you owe, right? No, you know, it goes back to what we've got in, thankfully here is a pretty sound, you know, legal system related to all these items. So I think that business context and that business risk sometimes gets lost in these negotiations and discussions related to, you know, indemnification caps and liability and the like.
Right. I think it's important to understand that and not forget as a seller that you have unlimited liability, essentially. I mean, probably to the full extent of the harm as you operate every day in your business. That exists. That's a real deal. You have 100% of the risk associated with running the business, both, you know, positive and negative. And from a liability perspective and doing harm with a customer or former employee, you own all of that. So the fact that you can even have a context of a cap or be able to limit that liability in a way is and or shed risk, which is what happens in an M&A transaction, de-risk. We often use the term de-risk. This is certainly one of the ways that you de-risk, not just you know, sort of the business risk when we talk about that, but it's also the liability risk of just operating the business day to day.
I think that's a great point and a great topic, fairly specific, but it's very important within the process. To recap later a little bit, a lawyer typically is going, your legal counsel is going to be the one who's going to walk you through what cap and baskets mean to you. A cap is that in the liability you seller might have to pay, the maximum amount you may have to pay in a breach of an indemnification clause. And a basket is the threshold of a claim in which you'd want to hit. So you want, to, as a seller, you want the smallest amount of the cap and a high basket. And if you're a buyer, you want a low basket and a high cap. The amount that in clause maybe may be as high as the purchase price. So look at the ratio of where we've seen it from 10% of a purchase price to is as high as the purchase price itself. You know, if we think about the transaction, think about this coming late in the deal and watch for it within a purchase agreement. And at the end of the day, you've got to really focus at the bigger deal at hand. A cap and basket is going to be a part of every legal agreement. And it shouldn't be a deal killer. It's something that you certainly will have negotiation about, but it should not be something that kills a deal. It's something that helps protect the risk of the buyer and is a reasonable precaution. With that, I'll turn it over to Matt and Mike for anything I might have missed.
Well, it's a great summary, Ryan. You know, I think that to Mike's point, and can't sort of reinforce it enough, having a very good M&A attorney who, you know, we talk sort of about deal makers and deal breakers attorneys, and a very good M&A attorney recognizes that their job is to both protect their client, but also work in the best interest of their client to help them get a deal done that the seller and both buyer want to finish. To that end, you know, having, especially for first time sellers, which we see a fair amount in our business here, because there's a lot of founder-led businesses. For those attorneys to spend some time prior to these negotiations in explaining what's really important and what's not important, what they can expect, where they're going to need to make appropriate decisions, I think is time well spent, because the later in the stage of a deal, just naturally the more tired and more emotional parties get. So it's good to head these things off early in the process. And again, you know, that's where we like to play our role. Our role isn't legal, but we just see it a whole bunch, right? And so hopefully this was helpful in a kind of a fairly technical part of the overall merger and acquisition process. Mike, over to you.
All right. Good summary, Matt. With that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We encourage you to tune in next week when we unpack more relevant topics to M&A and growth strategy for tech-enabled services companies. With that, make it a great week, and hope you tune in next time. So long.